phone. Don't need no speedy car to get me home. Don't need no nothing, all I need is time for the simple life. Ooh, go get your butt off of that lazy couch. Put down a laptop and get out of that house. Don't need no nothing, all I need is time for the simple life.
Welcome to Simple Life. This is your host, Cynthia Fernandez. I'll be with you for this hour dedicated to locals and their perspectives, their stories. What is a story? Is it true? Is it fiction? Stories are perspectives, really, our take on experiences that we have, and they could be fabricated, sometimes for entertainment, sometimes to manipulate behaviors. Stories are timeless. They've always existed throughout history. The trick is knowing it's a story. Being conscious is the key when you're hearing things, when you're saying things. And so today we have a treat in the studio today, a previous guest, Jerry Maupin. And Jerry has a lot of really, I think, interesting ideas and perspectives about living simply, about politics and local events. And so I thought it would be nice to have Jerry on again, and I hope you enjoy it. Welcome, Jerry.
Hey, hello. How you doing? Good to be back. It's kind of fun because I'm going to miss Hal. He's not gone yet, but I'm going to miss Coach and Article Man and some of the regular callers who at times were a little on the nutty side. And I'm going to miss Hal talking about a lot of the local issues.
I know what you mean.
But I guess Article Man and Bill Monning don't have anything on me. I am a returning guest, so
there you go.
I've got two notches on my belt now, so pretty cool.
So where shall we start today, Jerry?
Well, first of all, I wanted the world to know that I got out of jury duty today.
You survived.
Here I am this age, and it was the first time I'd ever been summoned for jury duty. I don't know how I'd been overlooked so long, but a couple weeks ago, I got the little notice in the mail, and I was instructed that I was to call the night before I was to appear.
Right.
And I was tabbed for jury duty in Monterey, so I didn't have the Salinas trek to make. But so I called the number, and I punched in my badge number and my PIN number, and I got the little voice that said that I was excused for the next 2 years. So it was pretty slick. I guess my message is, when you get the notice in the mail, go with it. It is it is a little bit of a civic duty. We had to take a few of these things seriously.
I agree.
But so that was the good news today. And I was thinking to myself, I told my neighbor that I wish it would have been that easy to get out of the draft back in the 60s. Just phone in a badge number and a PIN number, and somebody would say, well, you're out of here.
Forget, yeah, you're excused.
Don't call us for the next couple of years. That would have been great, but it didn't work that way.
No.
So anyway, I just wanted to mention those things before we got into anything else. But so that was it.
Yeah. So when Hal has the morning show, I know that you're an avid listener. You have been for a while. And some of the things that you've shared with me is what we're going to be missing out in terms of local coverage, local events, and people between where you live in Big Sur and all the way up to Santa Cruz feel similarly about that. What topic is burning to you, Jerry?
Well, I don't know if there's going to be a replacement for Hal's format, at least on the progressive side. I've never, spun the dial to try to find anything like that. And as far as I know, what Hal offered was unique to the peninsula. I know there was a station up in Santa Cruz that I used to listen to, but the only station, AM station, that we got in Big Sur, at least in the canyon that I live in, was 540 AM. And believe me, I will not be tuning in for more Catholic information. The nuns had me for 8 years, and it took me a long time to get over that. So Hal's selling into the Catholic doesn't impress me too much.
Yeah. Well, and we do have a lot of local issues going on. I mean, just to name a few, there's a lot of concern about changes in Fort Ord, and To be honest, I think a lot of people have a little bit of information. Very few people have done their own research independently to look at the total issue.
Well, you know, Hal's been talking about this quite a bit. And the other day I was listening, and he had Major Dick on, Scott Dick. And I was so surprised that Scott Dick his position was in favor of this. And I don't quite know what it is, whether it's a regular horse track where they go around in circles and people bet on it, or whether it's just a stables, or what kind of a facility they are thinking of putting out there. But the developer, apparently he was chased out of some jurisdiction down south. They didn't want to put up with it. And so he's come up here with his dream and scheme. And I just don't see that kind of a facility. I mean, if it's a regular horse track, I know they call it the Sport of Kings, but I don't see the movers and shakers on the peninsula going out to Fort Ord to place bets. And it's not the kind of thing that should attract people who really can't afford to be doing that. So I don't know where they're going with this thing. I know they're going to use a small portion of the
acreage.
Acreage out mm-hmm. there. But that, and I know this plan has been in the works for many years, but just because it was an idea that germinated 15 or 20 years ago doesn't necessarily mean that it's right for the peninsula today. So I wish I knew a little bit more about it, but just on the face of it, I don't see the horse track.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people would agree with you, and I wonder to myself if economics don't play a part in this. I mean, we all have been hit by the economic shift, let's call it, and the city of Marina also. In that mix, they're a growing community, and you know, probably looking at the value that they'd be getting from the developer and drawing in additional people in addition to people who live here.
Yeah, but I don't see the drawing in additional people as necessarily a positive. I mean, I've been on Highway 1 in the morning. I've been, you know, I've gone tried to get down the hill different times of the day. We've got enough congestion on our hands right now, and growth for growth's sake, I say improve what you got, and let's go from there.
Yeah, I would love to hear you at some of the town hall meetings. I know there have been meetings. I haven't attended any, but Scott, in one of his shows, talked about having attended in a meeting once he found out that, you know, Sam Farr and Bill Monning have been in support of this idea, and he wanted to really understand what the full scope was, because he had respect for those two people.
Well, you know, I don't know Farr that well. I listened, you know, I've gotten to know Monning through Hal's program. I mean, it was really quite a nice hookup that Hal would put together. I think it was once a week, and
yeah.
Monning was driving north on whatever up to the assembly, and he would take time out on his cell phone driving. I don't know if he knew it was against the law or not, but
speakerphone.
Excuse me. He would talk about local issues with Hal. So, and I got to know Monning, and I actually volunteered for him when he was running for state senate the previous go around. And I do have, you know, a respect. He's earned my respect, but I understand that the county supervisor is also in favor of this, and a lot of times those guys get into those positions and they're so caught up in creating jobs, and they only look at the economic end of things, and they don't balance it all out. So I hope there's some people that stand up and say, hold on a minute, let's give it some more talk.
Yeah, it's true. And at the same time, you know, a lot of people who do live here, who have lived here all their life, or maybe they've moved here and really grown to love the place, feel very protective. And it is a common occurrence for a human who feels protective to lose some objectivity and not understand the bigger picture.
Well, it's you can get into, are you talking about the NIMBY sort of thing? You know, not in my backyard, that attitude.
Oh, right,
that,
right, right.
You know, I don't, this is change and we're all resistant to change. Is that
well,
what you're talking about?
I don't think that's all that there is to it. But yes, that's certainly part of a human experience. I think the other part of it is maybe fear that, you know, we'll turn into a Los Angeles.
Well, of course, and the potential's there. I mean, aren't they? I think they're going to build a big hotel out there on the Highway 1, and you know, you lose some character when you start popping those things into your the environment. And Hal did a bit about the jobs that were going to be created, and there'll be some people that will make some money out there, but for the most part, the jobs are going to be menial, low pay, let's clean out the horse stalls and sell some tickets kind of jobs.
Yeah.
And those, as are most jobs of that sort, not the kinds of jobs that afford people a living. And so there'll be a certain class of people that will profit and do well, but for the most part, it won't mean that much of a positive economic impact, I wouldn't think.
Right. No, I see your point. And in terms of looking at the community overall, not having a win-win. Yeah, land planning is a tricky business. And I think, you know, in order to get something done, you've got to be able to appeal to all of the components that are making the decision. And sometimes...
Well, you know, doing nothing is doing something. And if they just... I mean, I heard Scott Dick say, well, going east is the only way Marina has to grow, or something to that effect.
I did hear that, too.
And I thought to myself, well, so... Why do they need to grow? You know, I live in an area that is very protected, and we love it. I mean, you can't build anything. You can't, you know, the schemers and dreamers have been put off Big Sur for a long time, and that's why it's a world-class destination. And if we start popping in horse tracks and outrageous hotels, you know, the Monterey Peninsula will begin to look just like every place else, and its draw will be, I think, diminished.
Well, I think you bring some really good points up, and there's a lot of folks, hopefully, who are out listening right now who would agree with you.
Well, just the water question.
I mean,
where does the water...
Where does the water come from?
Sure, I mean, which kind of takes us to something that Hal's been dwelling on over time, the desal plant. You know, I mean, we're running out of water. They're not going to let people take water out of the Carmel River soon, as I understand it. And so we're going to have the remedy is the desal plant. But, you know, that brings up something. I'm from back east. I'm a refugee from Chicago. And the concept of a private water company, of a corporation owning the water, is so foreign to me and kind of outrageous in a way. I don't understand why we don't just bite the bullet and make it a public facility.
Well, I heard, and I can't, I'm sorry, say whether this is true or not, but I did hear that Aromas did that. They got together all the people who live there, and they co-opted to purchase their water. And as a result, the property value actually goes up because you don't have that hanging over your head. You also have a much more unified buy-in amongst the people who live there around the uses of water. And, you know, maybe Monterey County is actually a more affluent community.
Well, you'd think so. You know, I work on around the peninsula, and I oftentimes hear people complaining about how their water costs have risen so much.
Oh, and will continue to.
And if Cal-Am gets this desal plant, you can be sure that they're going to pass along every penny of the cost of that. And I don't think people who have to buy water have seen anything yet. I'm fortunate. I live out, as I said, in Big Sur, and we take our water out of a creek, a stream that comes out of the Los Padres National Forest, and we have to sign off with the state to take so much water every month, but we don't pay anything, and we pump it up above our home, and it gravity feeds back down, and we get city water pressure, and it's something I don't have to complain about. So,
we're in studio today with local Jerry Maupin, and we are talking about local issues and perspectives. When we get back from this break, I want to talk, Jerry, more about your concept of enoughism, and we've got a story about a guy who actually took over a home that was foreclosed on and empty, and he had legal right and paperwork in place to do that. So stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back in studio with local Jerry Maupin, and we are talking about enoughism. So tell me, what does enoughism mean to you, Jerry? I know you coined that phrase.
I did.
Well, you said you did. Maybe you copied it.
I don't have too many original ideas or original thoughts, but the I don't know how that came to me, but I just was always impressed with people who seemed to be able to live a quality life without a lot of the burden that our culture forces on people.
Well, how do you mean? Give me an example.
Well, they realized that an automobile was a device for getting from point A to point B, for example. And whether it was a beater or a Lamborghini, really, they were both going to get stuck in traffic, and they were both going to get from point to point without too much trouble. And so the point of giving up blocks of time in your life and the effort involved to have the Lamborghini, I began to think, well, it's just not worth it. I would rather figure out how much time and effort and I got to buy the thing, I got to maintain it, I have to...
Oh, don't forget insurance.
Insurance. I mean, it's just, it's a crazy thing what they impose upon us, and we have a choice. We can say, no, I'm not going to do that.
We do have a choice, and a lot of people make unique choices,
sure.
And I think what you're referring to is maybe keeping up with the Joneses is a phrase that we're all used to hearing.
Exactly. I mean, our system forces us to, buy things without money we don't have to impress people that we don't like. That's what it really comes down to. And if you can forestall that, if you can take a step back and say, well, I don't need the Lamborghini. My Toyota Yaris will do fine. I think you're ahead of the game. And I mean, that holds true with everything. Your living space. You don't need a McMansion, as they refer to them. I think people are finally beginning to wake up to that, and clothes and whatever. I mean, just buy quality, maintain quality, pay for what you need or what you think you need, and be very careful about not buying into that nanosecond of acquisition where you get to say, aren't I great and aren't I wonderful and this is going to make me beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
If you can avoid that, that is, I think, means you are worshiping at the house of enoughism.
Mm-hmm. Enoughism. So knowing when it's enough.
Yeah.
And not expecting or wanting or craving more than you actually
need. Sure. And
need.
Part of it is looking at your situation, realizing that everything is about as accepting what it is, and realizing that that's the way it's going to be. You're really freed up to a great extent.
Well, and that's really true in this story that you shared with me earlier. What was the website?
Oh,
lifeedited.com.
Lifeedited.com. It's really an interesting
website.
Yeah,
for anyone listening who is sort of resonating or even curious about what Jerry's talking about right now, lifeedited.com has a myriad of posts and stories and some videos about people who are learning, as you say, to really become free through editing things in their life that they don't actually need, that are bringing more stress and more burden to their life experience every day.
Absolutely. The site is full of advice about that. As a matter of fact, I wrote down some of the little...
Let's hear it.
Well, of course, they did the shoemaker thing, small is beautiful, less is more. What's this one? If you live for having it all, what you have will never be enough. Simplicity is the art of subtracting the obvious and adding the meaningful. You should never have anything in your house that you do not know to be useful or believe to be beautiful.
Mm.
And there's two ways to be rich: acquire much or have few wants. Here's kind of another play on that one. Contentment comes not so much from great wealth as from few wants. And this is the important one. It kind of goes along with what I was saying, and that is that stuff is not passive. Stuff wants your time, your attention, your allegiance, and I think Bruce Lee, the martial artist, said you have to hack away at the unnecessary every day.
I like that.
There you go.
I like that.
I know it's hard to keep in mind in our culture, you know. I mean, the new, the latest and greatest, the flashiest is always in your face, and we're bombarded with thousands of teasers every day, and you just have to shut it off somehow, and it really frees you up, makes you more aware of what's going on around you, encourages you to have better relationships with people around you, and I think a lot more laughs.
Yeah, I just flashed on a conversation I had a little over a week ago with a local, Frank Wilson, actually. I interviewed him on the radio station a few months ago, and Frank was beaming. Frank was beaming. He's like, Frank, what's new? And he says, well, I've never felt better in my life. I feel so light. My head is clear. I'm not worried. I'm not stressed. I'm like, what happened? He says, I paid off all my debt. I'm completely out of debt. I don't owe anybody anything. I can work if I want, just enough to pay my bills. I can work a lot. I have total freedom now, and I am so happy. And it was really awesome.
You know, when you started to tell that story,
yeah.
I thought that the end of the story would be that he had paid off his mortgage, but apparently he's done even better than that.
Yeah.
To live debt-free is, you know, it's almost an unimaginable place to be for most Americans. My wife and I are fortunate enough that because of the way we live, I mean, we live in a very small place in Big Sur, but it's in a redwood forest, and there's a little stream that flows by, and it's just absolutely beautiful. But to be debt-free, I guess one of the big things it means is that you get all kinds of zero interest promotions in the mail from the credit card companies.
I think that's true. Yeah, I think that's true. I think it is a counterculture, you might say.
Sure. I mean, the people that don't need zero interest are offered zero interest. I don't get it. My brother, who's, you know, buried with debt, he'll never get that offer. And he's the one that desperately needs it.
Well, yes.
Crazy.
So we're talking about culture and sort of the norms in our culture around debt and keeping up with what all the advertisements say you should have and what your neighbors have and what the power people have and how that's just really sort of a bind that we get ourselves into when we buy into it.
It's really terrible. On Life Edited, the story that you were talking about was the in Texas there'd been a home foreclosed in a kind of looked like an upscale neighborhood. And it had gone into foreclosure, and in the course of the foreclosure, the lending institution that was behind it went out of business, and so the place was just sitting there, and along came a fellow, and he moved in, and under Texas law, at least the Texas law that he thinks serves him well, he can, by occupying that house for a period of time, claim it under a law known as adverse possession. Now, in most jurisdictions, adverse possession only sets in after you've occupied and paid taxes and notified the whole world that a piece of property is yours. But apparently in Texas, which figures, you can just set up shop and claim adverse possession. But
so
the story is that the neighbors are very upset about this guy. And, of course, a backstory is that the neighbors are all white, and the interloper that they're so upset about is black. So it's kind of a play on the White House and Texas.
Well, yeah, so this Texas man is a squatter, if you will, in a $330,000 house. He has invested all of $16 to file some paperwork, and let's play that interview for you. Hang on.
Paramount's Waterford Drive is lined with well-manicured $300,000 homes. So when a new neighbor moved in without the usual sale, mortgage-paying homeowners had a few questions.
What paperwork is it, and how is it legally binding if he doesn't legally own the house? He just squats there.
Lee Lowry and her husband told me the house down the street was in foreclosure for more than a year. The owner walked away, then the mortgage company went out of business. Apparently, that opened the door for someone to take advantage of the situation. Kenneth Robinson told us he's no squatter. He says he moved in on June 17th after months of research about a Texas law called adverse possession.
This is a not a normal process, but it's not a process that's not known. It's just not known to everybody.
Robinson says this piece of paper gives him rights to the house. It's an online form he printed out and filed at the Denton County Courthouse for $16. It says the house was abandoned and he's claiming ownership.
I went through, looked at it and added some things here, you know what I mean, for my own protection.
The house is virtually empty, just a few pieces of furniture, no running water or electricity. But Robinson says just by setting up camp in the living room, Texas law gives him exclusive negotiating rights with the original owner. If the owner wants him out, he would have to pay off his massive mortgage debt, and the bank would have to file a complicated lawsuit. Robinson believes neither is likely. So if he stays in the house after 3 years, he can ask the court for the title.
That's your goal eventually, is to have title of this home, to be
absolutely
the owner of this home?
Absolutely.
And
owner record. You know what I mean? At this point, you know, since I possess it, I am the owner of the home.
Robinson posted no trespassing signs after neighbors asked police to arrest him for breaking in. But Flower Mound officers say they can't remove him from the property because home ownership is a civil matter, not criminal. Lowry and her neighbors continue to look for legal ways to get him out.
Or if he wants the house, buy the house like everyone else had to. Get the money, buy the house.
Robinson says he's not buying anything. As far as he's concerned, the $330,000 home is already his, and he has the paperwork to prove it. Casey Norton, Channel 8 News.
So that was a really interesting story.
I like the guy. He's a bold fellow.
Yeah, it takes a lot of guts to move into a neighborhood where everyone wants you out.
Especially that neighborhood, it sounds like. But, you know, only in Texas. My attitude is, hey, the guy's got the stones to do it. If he can hang in there, more power to him. And these neighbors who, got caught up in mortgage. I think the word is French. It means death grip.
Oh, my goodness.
I think.
I didn't
something
realize
like that. Mortgage. Mort
yeah.
is death. And I think it's death grip. And that's,
Well, there are a lot of empty houses in Monterey County.
You know, I see, though, where sales are up, values are up.
Yeah.
So I think we're doing okay here. My wife mentioned that there had been several sales in Carmel in the $600,000 range, which she thought was surprising. And I guess that against recent history would be surprising, but because there was a time when you could hardly get a shack for under $1 million. But I don't know. You know, we own our little place out there. There's not too many places like it. So I guess there was a story that Big Sur values were going to rise faster than Carmel this year, which it doesn't mean anything because it's just a roof over your head. But, there's some slight satisfaction in knowing that, your hovel is worth something.
Well, and I wonder if it has anything to do with what you mentioned earlier around the Big Sur area having moratoriums on building and development. I mean, doesn't that raise
the value?
Well,
that's true. There's only so much of it. And I worked on a lot of homes down there, and there's just not that many building sites left. Or if they're buildable, there's no water. So, and the places that are down there, are already having water problems. I know Ventana and Post Ranch, prominent inns have their water problems, and I know locals who have water problems. And this year, because of the little bit of rain we've had, it's even more of a difficulty.
We're in studio today at Simple Life Radio with Jerry Maupin, a local, and we're talking about local perspectives on local issues. So, Jerry, I wonder if I know you had more on your list. Was there something else that
what was I up to? I can always go off on the things that I'm supposed to be worried about now. The IRS and Benghazi and the AP snooping and this character Snowden who's running around now. But, much to do about nothing. I'm telling you, if there are people. I remember years ago when Hillary Clinton went on some talk show and she said that there was a vast right-wing conspiracy, and she was roundly shouted down and booed off the stage almost. But in fact, there is a vast right-wing conspiracy.
Well, they
and
were the
every
ones
move
that booed her.
Every move that the Democrats make, especially Obama, I mean, he can hardly say that an idea is his for fear that it will be you know, fought against for just that reason, no matter what. I mean, the guy could cure cancer tomorrow and they'd have a problem with it. It's an amazing story.
Yeah, it's very polarized right now. Yeah, someone mentioned, I can't remember which source this came from, but there's been a shift and there will continue to be a shift directly connected to mortality. Like, we are so polarized right now that people will have to literally leave the planet for things to shift.
Oh, they will.
It's going to take a long time.
No question about it. I mean, we know that the Tea Party membership is top-heavy with people who have been here for 60-plus years. And, you know, they grew up in a way and with a mindset that is in the way now. And a lot of the young people coming along, all power to, all praise to them. They don't seem to be concerned about too many of the things that cause we older people to get upset.
So, Jerry, in terms of enoughism, does any of your philosophy around that have to do with how much bad news you take in, how much, you know, political rhetoric you take in?
You know, I've begun to wean myself off of the television.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there was the only shows that I watch All In with Chris Hayes, and I watch Carnacki, Up with Steve Carnacki on Friday and Saturday and Sunday mornings. But I, you know, I've put Chris Matthews and what's her name, the woman that has the 6 o'clock show. I can't think of her name. Maddow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to put them on the shelf. And I long ago put the likes of Fox News or CNN on the shelf. As a matter of fact, I was kind of tickled today. I read where Rupert Murdoch has filed divorce against his wife, who at one time was his intern.
I was going to say.
Big prenup there, you know, of course. She is not going to walk away with billions. But can you imagine? He's 83, and I don't know what age she is, but she's much younger. I mean, get a life, babe. Come on. You know, what's that all about? I don't care how many billions that guy's dragging around.
Yeah.
I mean, he's almost a terrorist.
Well,
having backed that bunch the way he has over the years and you know, fed those that so-called news outfit.
Yes, news has taken on a whole different look and feel. Well, we're going to take another break at the moment and come right back with Jerry Maupin, local Big Sur resident, for more perspective and stories. Hang on. And we're back in studio here with Jerry Maupin, local Big Sur resident. How long have you been down there, Jerry?
I'm coming up on about 25 years, you know.
Yeah.
I lived about the same amount of time in Chicago.
Chicago. Was that when you were an attorney?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I guess you're still an attorney.
Well, I am. I think once in, never out. It's sort of like the Marine Corps,
Oh, boy.
You know, yeah. But those years are well behind me. I can't, you know, I think back on that, I can't believe I really did it. You know, I tried 6 cases where my clients were, the prosecution wanted the death penalty.
Oh, my gosh.
And when I see things like this Jody Arias trial, who, by the way, my wife and I knew in Big Sur. She was a waitress at Ventana.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Cute little girl, bubbly, just the nicest person in the world, used to lead hikes down there and whatever. And, of course, the trial went on for months, and I would encounter people who said, oh, I'm just fascinated by this trial. And, I couldn't believe how long it lasted. I mean, I would try cases in a week or 2 weeks at most, and this thing went on forever. But amazing to me that somebody mentioned, yeah, she used to work at Ventana, and then something clicked with us, and we said, oh, yes, we remember her, and what a tragedy that was.
But yeah.
Yeah, so I was in the legal game for a while there.
And one of the reasons you decided to leave that field was your enoughism.
Pretty much. I mean, I did well financially, lived downtown in a beautiful place, but I could see that there was no retiring in place. It was just too expensive, and I couldn't see myself at the age that I am now schlepping around town looking for my next case. And my wife was a realtor, and she had pretty much enough of that, and so we bought the Airstream and took off.
And never regretted it since.
Never. Never. I mean, the quality of our life improved drastically in spite of, you know, driving the Mercedes and living in the big place downtown and the clothes and the trips and the restaurants and the whatever. We live a much higher quality life now than we did then.
Would you say that you're happier in total now?
I suppose. I, that's another thing about enoughism. You can't pay too much attention.
Yeah.
You got to get up and take the day as it comes. And somebody said, try to treat every day as if it's a life. You start out in the morning and go through your day and take it as it comes. You don't have to force yourself on your days quite as much here and living the life that we live as we had to back in the city.
Yeah, speaking of the city, we just spent a week down in LA. We took Bella to Disneyland and Universal Studios, and I was born in San Diego County, so it was kind of a big reminder about the place, the temperature and all of that, but certainly it's much more populated than when I was there.
Oh yeah.
And it's just, oh God, I was craving trees, I was craving some open space, something that wasn't cement.
Sure. And if you live there, you have to make a lot of money, at least it seemed to me, to assuage the negatives that were piled upon you living in the city. I mean, I you see these people living in their penthouses and whatever, what was the show that used to be on television, the Rich and the Famous or something. But people pay a hell of a price for that. And fortunately, my wife and I had the whatever it takes to abandon it.
Well, and I think to our credit as human beings, we adapt. We adapt and we find the silver lining of whatever the situation is that we're involved in.
Oh,
and
we do.
That's one way we survive.
Exactly, but when you live in the city, you're like that frog in that that pot, and somebody keeps turning up the heat. And you don't know it, until you're too old, and then you're stuck there. I mean, I have friends who are still back there practicing law. They hate every minute of it.
Yeah.
They just weren't as fortunate as I was. I had worked construction through college and law school, and as a carpenter, so I had some place to go. I could put away the law books and pick up a hammer, whereas these guys, all they know is practicing law, and it's now the field is incredibly crowded where it wasn't when I was practicing, and the law schools just keep pumping people out. I cringe when I hear somebody say, my niece or nephew or my grandson or granddaughter, they're going to law school. Because even the sought-after prestigious jobs are just mind-crushing, billable hours as your whole life. And to do it as I did, where you just go out and open your own office, is a thing of the past, I think.
Well, and what would it be like if, as you mentioned earlier, we just decided to get off the rat race? What if we decided what kind of lifestyle we wanted and had that be within reason and really focused on well-being versus, as you said, impressing people you don't like?
Well, my father, he was a truck driver and worked in a factory, hardworking guy, and my mother worked after I went off to college. But my father would always say that all he wanted to do was go off and live in a cabin in the woods. Mm. So I like to think I'm living my father's dream, and another thing he said, though, he said, let's just shut the whole show down for 2 weeks. Oh. Everything. Just shut down the economy, shut down the stores, shut it all off for 2 weeks. Give everybody a big rest, and maybe they'll think about how they're going to go back to it. And that maybe they'll realize that they don't have to be wage slaves. They can slow down. And if we could get that mindset working and pass it along to our offspring, I think it would be we'd have a much better world.
Well, there's something to be said for stepping away and taking a break.
There is, I've done it a few times in my life. As a matter of fact, As I said before on the program, my wife and I go away for 4 months every year. We've done so for 26 years. We took off a year in 1978 with the Airstream and traveled around. We took off 2 years when we abandoned Chicago.
Huh.
So out of 20 years, we calculate we were on vacation for 7 years.
I can't say I know anybody else who could say that.
I mean, you know, the result was, you know, you don't have a big pile of money. You know, you're not one of those who's scrimped and saved and contributed to this 401k or his IRAs or whatever. But what's the point?
You right. Know, yeah. Much less worry yeah. in some respects. We're in studio today with local Big Sur resident Jerry Maupin, who is currently a well-employed general contractor who doesn't want more business. Because he has enough.
Well, it's right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. I manage to keep busy and keep my clients happy, which I think is one of the most important things. And, you know, I make a living along the way. And I've been privileged, as I worked as a carpenter on the peninsula, to work on some of the most prestigious homes and beautiful renovations, and been able to work for some contractors who allowed their people to take a lot of pride in what they did, and it wasn't a, you know, a slam bam hurry up ma'am kind of a game for me, and that has been really wonderful.
Well, I know, you know, you've done some things for us at the Pilgrim's Way and in the Secret Garden as well, and it's really interesting to work with someone like yourself who isn't there for the more money agenda.
As a matter of fact, I think I forgot to bill you on the last gig, and I walked in the other day into the bookstore, and I my wife piled a couple books on the counter, and I picked one out, and I picked out some incense, and we stepped up. Maureen took out her card and handed it to Paul, and Paul said, "No, that's okay. You've got credit." He billed himself and put it on the books as credit for me. So, you know, it was. It's like when I was lawyering. I love going to court, and I went to court almost every day, but I hated the money part of it.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? I knew
It's a different part of business.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you love to run the bookstore and just have people come in and love a book, and you could say, hey, here, take it.
Well, see, in my case, I get to buy everything, and Paul has to pay the bills.
See?
It's perfect.
Yes. No, that's the thing, you know, if you can just avoid the money part of it and do what you want. But like my brother says, you know, if you go to work or go to, you know, start your day and you do what you love to do, you never go to work. And I mean,
well,
he really believes that. And you guys have a great business. And as a matter of fact, I'm reading two of the books that I picked up.
Oh, which ones?
One called The Revenge of Geography.
Uh-huh.
And that is the story of how geography really is the fate of nations. And the United States has prospered, you know, people would have us believe because we have better ideas and we're the democracy and whatever. No, we really prospered because we lived, the United States is situated in the 20 to 60 degrees north latitudes, and which is the temperate zone.
Mm.
So we had great growing. Plus, we had a free ocean to the east and a free ocean to the west. So that it's an interesting book talking all about that and comparing our situation, our fate to countries around the world who haven't been so fortunate.
Right.
And then the other book that I'm reading is one that I'm glad you brought to my attention, and that is the book about the XL pipeline.
Yes.
And the paradigm, I think
yes.
it's called. But wonderful, wonderful discussion of that and where we're going, and actually pretty scary.
Well, it's a certainly an eye-opening discourse, because this is Sam Avery, the author, traveled a year. He was a history professor, and he was so struck by this as an issue that he wanted to educate himself. So he took a year off and traveled the location of where the pipeline was going to be installed. And literally interviewed people.
Sure.
Right? I mean, like you were talking about community, this is going to affect the people in an everyday life in, life out situation. So he interviewed the people all through the states, beginning in Alberta, as well as some of the workers on the pipeline, and has pictures, and it's just, it's very
for anybody who really wants to know about what the tar sands represent,
yes.
and what will happen if the tar sands, what they get from the tar sands is allowed to flow after it's doctored up in a horrific fashion,
yes.
so it will flow south, and what it will mean to the world environment if it's allowed to be spewed into that environment. I think Stephen Hawking, the physicist,
yes,
has said that it's pretty much too late, you know. And there's not much that we as humans can do to undo what we've done.
Mm.
And
I don't agree with that. I think there's an awful lot we don't know.
Well, I hope we can come up with something. And, don't get me wrong.
I mean, who knows who's right at this point. But as long as we're sharing perspectives, I think that in terms of science, I heard an interview not that long ago, and this scientist said, we know about 5% of what's out there. We know about 5% of
how things work,
how
they fit
work
together. Well,
yeah,
you know, I hope that's the case.
Hmm.
Jeez, I would hope that we know more than 5%.
I know, it's insulting,
that's,
isn't
come
it?
Come on. I mean, they tell me I'm only using 10% of my brain power. I tell these people I'm maxed out.
Yeah.
This is it. I'm using all of it. I'm going to have to borrow some brain power.
Well, it's been great talking with you, and I hope all of you have enjoyed it as much as I have. Jerry, you're a wealth of insight and information.
I don't know about that.
And I love the enoughism.
Yes.
I hope that catches
the
on.
The Church of Enoughism.
There you go.
We're going to open a storefront somewhere.
There you go. You know? There'll be no fixtures.
Nothing. No. No pews.
I want to tell you all about some of the events coming up at the bookstore, Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden. We have a sort of a surprise visitor coming to town, Dennis McKenna, who is a brother of Terrence McKenna, and he wrote a book titled Brotherhood of the Screaming Abyss, and it is, as you might imagine, a book about what it is to be a sibling in an interesting dynamic. And he talks about times with his brother Terrence and all of the goings-on that were included in their relationship, including their own special language. So if you're interested at all, that event is going to be June 20th. That's a Thursday. He's going to be at the store with his book between 1 and 3 in the afternoon. And that is Dennis McKenna, Thursday, June 20th, 1 to 3, for a meet and greet. And then as you may have hopefully tuned in last week, I interviewed Patrice Vacchione. She's the author of The Knot Untied, and she will be putting on a workshop and a reading in the Secret Garden. It's called Poetry in the Garden on summer solstice. That's Friday the 21st. It's going to be an evening event, 6 to 8 p.m. The cost is $20 in advance and $25 at the door. And that whole event is going to be really focused on a small group of people, so there is limited space. She will be working directly with each of the participants there. So if you want more information, you can check out her website, which is patricevecchione.com, or look at it on our event page, Facebook/Pilgrim's Way, and that's where our events are listed. And I'm really looking forward to having that there. So I hear the music coming, and that means that we're out of time. Thanks for listening. We'll be back here next Saturday, and hope you tune in for another show with Simple Life, Stories for the Adventurous at Heart. Take good care. Zabadab, 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 zabad